Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo, but today we got a extra special guest here, and we're going to talk some Hapkido today, and I am really overjoyed and to hear the story of our guest, and, you know, bad pod, and actually we'll actually re-record this part, but I realized that I did not get the pronunciation of your name before we started, so
oh, that's fine. It's Leno.
Eric Leno. All right, so Mr. Leno, we are going to get into our little chat here. I usually start things off with kind of a brief background of my history. But since we're here for you and not me, I'm just going to say that, you know, I have advanced ranks in Kenpo and in Capoeira, and I've done some Taekwondo and some Hapkido and a little bit of boxing. Looking to get back into that if I ever find some free time. But that's a little bit about my background, and we may get into more of that as we go along. But I and my listeners would like to know how did you get started in martial arts? How did the martial arts find you, and where did it all start for you?
Oh, well, that pretty much started from when I was in a walker. In Philadelphia, back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was this thing called Kung Fu Theater would come on every Sunday.
Oh, yes, and, I know it well.
the old martial arts movies and stuff. And my mother would put me in the walker, sit me in front of the television when I'd be on. And that's the only time she ever got peace from me. So obviously, I would just sit there and I would just be focused on the television for that 2 hours while she could do everything else she needed to do. So I basically loved martial arts from the minute I guess I could see. But, I started in Shotokan Karate in 82 at the Glenside Shotokan Karate Club. It's right outside Philadelphia. It's a town of Glenside. And this is the 80s. So, this is back then, there was no kid black belts. So I did that for 7 years until I moved to the Poconos areas, the Poconos of Pennsylvania, where I first started with the Korean arts, and I never looked back since. And that was the 1989.
Gotcha. Now, with the Shotokan school, was it just because that was the one that was close, or was there any particular reasoning behind that particular school?
Oh, well, my father, he was a brown belt in Shotokan, and that's the one he recommended my mother to put me in, because he did Shotokan, so he figured I should do Shotokan, and it was close to the house. It was only about a couple miles from the house, so it's just I just enjoyed kicking and punching. I didn't know about karate, kung fu, taekwondo. I didn't know about styles. It's just, to me, everything was karate. I'd watch kung fu theater. I still call it karate movies. Everybody called it karate, So I was just happy to be kicking and punching, And it was very traditional. Unfortunately, the Hanshi of that, those two schools, it was the Glenside Shotokan Karate Club and the Philadelphia Shotokan Karate Club. He passed away during COVID. He caught COVID and passed away, what I heard. And now the Glenside Shotokan Karate Club is, unfortunately, they have shut down. I believe the Philadelphia one is still there. But, the Glenside has shut down since COVID, unfortunately. But, I was there for 7 years. I just, very traditional. So a lot of times working stances, stepping, punching, stepping, kicking, nothing exciting, really. But I was just happy to be doing that. I didn't care. I didn't know about styles or anything like that. I was just happy to be kicking and punching.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a Shotokan school not too far from my house, and I've been, thinking about giving it a try. I went down to the school not too long ago and checked out the classes and stuff. But like with everything, there's a million things that I want to do and not enough time to do it in.
Ain't that the truth?
So we'll see. So with the Shotokan, change systems?
Honestly, it was only because, and there actually was a Shotokan school by the house we moved to in the Poconos. We just didn't know about it. But I had braces at the time. And always going to my orthodontist appointments, there was man, I consider my main instructor and my Korean father, Grandmaster Sunbok Ko, who was the vice president of the World Pro Aikido Federation. His school was there. And we always went past it, you know, and I'd always be looking. My mother always knows we'd be looking. So it was about a month we moved up there. It's been about a month. And so one day we're coming back from the orthodontist, and she said, let's stop in here and just, you know, check it out. Let's just see. And my father always said the Japanese arts were the best. So I was kind of like, well, but they're Korean. And she's like, well, let's just look at it. So we stopped and we were watching. And Grandmaster Ko invited me to take a free trial class. And I did it. And I just fell absolutely in love with it. Just fell in love with the Hapkido. Most people in the Korean arts, they start at Taekwondo first. Not me. I started in Hapkido first. I did Hapkido from 89. See, I did. I started Hapkido 89. I didn't start Taekwondo until 1996. So I did the total reversal.
Gotcha. Now, was that school, you know, strictly Hapkido, or was it a mix?
Yes, he was strictly. Okay. Yeah, no, he was strictly Hapkido, and he also did Kukso, which I got ranks in Kukso from him. But he was mostly just Hapkido. I mean, he held an eighth dan in Taekwondo as well and stuff. But he was a Hapkido man, and that's pretty much what I am. I'm a Hapkido man. I held ranks in Kukso. And I hold ranks in Taekwondo, but I'm a Hapkido man for sure.
gotcha. Now, so, you know, contrasting going from the different styles, you know, was it a big kind of culture shock? Did you have to kind of unlearn your Shotokan training, or what, did it just kind of
Because the kicking in both styles are so completely different. Where, you know, Shotokan, I think it's a lot of times because the Japanese, I think they have shorter legs compared to the Koreans, you know, so their kicks are much shorter, like little snappy moves, where Korean kicking, you know, it's longer, more thrusting. Well, they've got snap, but it's a lot of thrusting to it, you know, pushing the hips behind it, where, you know, Shotokan is just snappy movement, you know, and it's very hard. Shotokan is a very hard style, you know, where Hapkido is a mixture of soft and more circular motion. And using angles. So yeah, it was definitely a big shock, the differences between the two styles. But I just absolutely fell in love with Hapkido from the very first class. Gotcha. And I'd never, for 4 years straight, I never missed a day. I was there 6 to 7 days a week. I go to school, you know, then I go to the dojang, which, you know, karate is called dojo and Korean arts called dojang. And I was there for another 6 hours, you know, then I go home, do my homework, go to sleep, get up, do it all over again. that was my life. I was very surprised. I even went to my senior prom because I didn't date in high school. I didn't have girlfriends or anything like that. My girlfriend was a dojang.
Nice. I can relate. I started in Kenpo in the 90s, and I remember instead of going to my senior prom, I went to sparring class and,
nice.
Didn't regret it one bit. So,
well, our senior prom was on a Saturday night, so there was no classes. So, no. Trust me, if I had the choice between the senior prom or the dojang, I probably would have gone to the dojang.
Very nice. So, you know, was there, kind of was there any? Well, I guess I should go back. Did you get a black belt in Shotokan? Before you?
No, I did not. I made now there's a Shotokan school here in North Carolina, Clayton, the town of Clayton, where I live now. And I know I stopped in just to visit a guy and just, you know, and say hi. Mm-hmm. And I know his ranking system, the red belt he has is one of the lower belts. Now, the red belt, I made the red belt, which was the belt before brown belt, then black. Mm-hmm. So it was a higher Q belt in the school that we went to. I guess it just all depends on the school, really. Mm-hmm. But I know I made the red belt because in the 80s, you know, you weren't getting a black belt at 13 years old, 12 years old. That wasn't happening, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, it'd be probably, if I remember correctly, you couldn't even get a black belt with them in the Kwesai Shotokan Karate Club until you at least were 16. And I think you had to be pretty phenomenal before they would even award that. It was very, very traditional, very, very strict, very, very disciplined, hardcore school.
Gotcha. Any desire to go back and get that black belt in Shotokan at all? Or?
Oh, sure. I've had through, you know, the past thought about it and stuff, but my wife's Korean, and Koreans and Japanese don't like each other too much. So I think she feels a betrayal.
Gotcha. So. Very nice. Gotcha. So
I have taken up judo in the past. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. judo. So you did.
But I have taken up judo in the past year and a half, only because at the school I teach now, my partner, the owner, actually had instructor. He's more of a judo guy. Mm-hmm. So he's been teaching. So I've been getting paid to learn judo. So I've made blue belt now in judo. So
okay,
which is fun. Nice. I really enjoy judo a lot. I really wish I would have taken that up when I was younger. I just never had any desire for it. I guess I didn't really understand it. But yeah, judo is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm like, wow, this is really amazing. Now I'm like, I'm an old man, 50 years old. I'm trying, let myself get slammed on the ground. It's like, oh, this would have been so much better when I was younger.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed judo.
Yeah, that's another thing that I've been, thinking about getting into, but not sure my body can handle that, but I would like to give it a try and have been kind of eyeballing a school that's out my way. And
but just let the instructor know that you're older now and your body doesn't heal like you used to and stuff, and they'll accommodate you, for sure.
Yeah, very nice. So to kind of help clear it up for me and the listeners, so the Taekwondo kind of Hapkido school that I was at many, many years ago. it was, I wasn't there for very long, maybe a year. And there was not a real clear, a clear split between the Taekwondo and the Hapkido. So maybe you could help explain the difference between Hapkido and Taekwondo.
Definitely can. Taekwondo is pretty much it's pretty much Korean Shotokan. It's pretty much what it is. I mean, the Kugiwon style, World Taekwondo Federation style. It's it's definitely branched off a lot from like the Shotokan, but it basically what it was. Taekwondo was first Tang Soo Do, which is pretty much Korean Shotokan. It was actually a style Chuck Norris is known for. It's Tang Soo Do, but then the kicks, they've changed the kicks a little more flippy and stuff, but it's all just punching and kicking, mostly kicking, really. I mean, even in I just found this out myself. I don't know, maybe I just didn't remember or if it's changed. You're not in Taekwondo competition, you're not even allowed to throw a lead hand punch. Yeah, you can't even throw, I mean, you can't punch in the face or the head as it is in Taekwondo to begin with, but not you can't even throw a lead punch, like a jab to the chest. It has to be all rear, backhand punches. I'm just like, this is why Taekwondo popularity is going down so bad. It's just they're making ridiculous rules, and it's just, it just doesn't make any sense. But Hapkido, we are encompasses everything, throwing like the arts of judo, joint lock, joint manipulation, like you see in Aikido, stuff like that. A lot of kicking, punching techniques, ground techniques. So it's an eclectic art and encompasses pretty much everything. That's what I love about it so much. Now, we're not like our ground techniques, you're not going to go up against the Gracies and think you're going to beat them on the ground. Our techniques are more like if we go to the ground to get the opponent away from us or off us to get back up to our feet to re-engage or get the heck out of there, But it just encompasses everything. It's beautiful art.
Gotcha. Very nice. So the Hapkido school, as I mentioned, don't have a ton of time for everything that I want to do. I was thinking about getting back into Hapkido, and I did visit the local school and got to take a little little trial class to kind of re-wet my appetite for it. One of the things that they mentioned at this particular school, they don't do forms. Is that kind of across Hapkido, or is it particular just certain schools don't do that, or how's that?
Well, that's traditional. Traditional Hapkido has no forms. Forms are actually, there's five forms in Hapkido that are actually put in by Grandmaster Kwan Shik Myung. He was the founder of the World Hapkido Federation. He's since passed, but he's the one that developed five forms for Hapkido, and so a few other Korean grandmasters took on that route, but really. Traditional Hapkido, there's absolutely no forms.
Okay. Very nice. Good. I've got a lot to remember in Kenpo. So, I don't need more filling up my brain right now. So we'll see.
Well, I do have a little experience in Kempo. I used to in the mid to late '90s. I was hired by Sensei Bob Walton to work at his Kempo school, teach his guys, you know, joint manipulation and some defense techniques to that, the Kempo. And, you know, he paid me also part of that as I get to learn Kempo. So I got to do it for a little bit. Like, and I really enjoyed Kempo. It was beautiful art as well. And it was under the Grandmaster Dennis Tosten, the AmeriKick system. And those schools are all over the Philadelphia area and Pennsylvania. So I think he's Ed Parker lineage. I don't remember. It's, like I said, this is the mid to late 1990s. I was there and stuff. But no, I didn't get any real rank in it. You know, I was teaching so much. I didn't really get a chance to actually learn all the katas and the stuff I had to, nor the tests really. You know, I just was teaching so much. So,
Gotcha.
But I really enjoyed it, though. Gotcha. I think it's great art. It's amazing art.
Gotcha. So we've got the Hapkido, we've got the Taekwondo, we got the Judo. Is there any other arts that you've trained in?
Yes, I've trained in Shorinru, Aikido, Aido, Gumdo. I've also kickboxed. Now I've taken up Muay Thai within the last year and a half, too, because the kickboxing I did in my youth was more PKA style, you know, where it's kicking above the belt, you know, just punching and kicking, no elbows, no knees, no leg kicks, no throws, even though PKA at the beginning did allow throws. But, you know, by the time I started kickboxing, there was none of that. And, you know, you got to talk about the early 90s, real early 90s here, you know. So I'm like, so I have got 5 amateur fights where I'm undefeated, you know, by the grace of God, 3 by KO, 2 by decision. But there was no money. I mean, even back then when Dennis Alexia was the world champion, I think he maybe made $100,000 a fight. By the time you pay your trainers and gym fees and all that, what do you really have left over? You know, You still have, you know, as a pro kickboxer, you still need to hold, you know, pretty much hold a 9-to-5. Yeah. It's not like boxing where you make millions of dollars. I mean, I'm assuming it's changed now, because, you know, with the rise of MMA and stuff and K1 and all that, I'm sure the guys are making a lot more money now than it was back in my old days and stuff like that. But there was no money, so I never pursued, you know, that as a career, as an avenue. You know, it stung a lot not to get paid, you know.
Yeah.
So getting punched and kicked in the head and not really get paid for it, it's kind of made no sense to me, you know. But I've got experience in that Muay Thai, a little bit of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. I had a friend in Scranton, Pennsylvania, who he was a purple belt in it, and he showed me enough where I wanted to learn just enough, just for my own self defense, you know, my own protection, in case God forbid, you know, if I got into an altercation in the street, went to the ground, you know. But I'd say I got any real experience in teaching it, no. But I'm really enjoying the judo, and we have a lot of the ground game in judo. You know, pretty much that's what Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is. It's just judo, but a lot more ground game, you know. And so if the opportunity arises, I'll definitely shoot to train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for sure. It's, I mean, there's nothing better when it comes to, if you go to the ground, there's nothing better than that.
Gotcha. So going back to kind of, you know, the competing side of it, you know, how did that start for you? Were you always kind of interested in that side of it?
I always enjoyed fighting in tournaments. You know, I competed in lots of point tournaments. You know, I've won a grand championship in 5 tournaments, not like back to back, you know, but through my tournament career, you know, when I had to get first place in my division, I went grand championship. I won it 5. I did that 5 times, but I've always placed. That's one thing I can say, except for the Pennsylvania State Games. The Pennsylvania State Games is the only time I never played. The only tournaments I never placed in. But every other tournament I've competed in, I've never got anything lower than 3rd. I've always at least placed in 1st, 2nd, or 3rd. You know, so I always place. So I always got a trophy. Which, you know, take it for what it's worth. It's a piece of plastic, right? It's fun to win when you're younger. You know, Yeah. But. I started because the guy I was learning Shorinru under, Hanshi Carl Long, the owner of Sakura Martial Arts, Kingston, Pennsylvania. Little shout out there. he was from, you know, obviously it's, you know, small community, the martial arts community in general. It's pretty small compared to the population of the world. So he's friends with a lot of the teachers and stuff in that area, and a few of them were kickboxing. So, you know, they set little fights here and there, you know, so he would have me fight and stuff like that. And, I did, you know, fairly well. I mean, I had pretty much hardly any boxing skill, at that time. But, you know, the kids I went up against, you know, were pretty much the same level as I was, no boxing skills. So, you know, now my boxing skills much better. I started learning boxing years ago and stuff like that. So my boxing skills much better now. But it was just something, you know, I was like, well, doing point tournaments all the time, let me try full contact, you know, just let me see. And I enjoyed it. Don't get wrong. It's just like, you know, but it wasn't the avenue I was going to pursue because there's no money, you know, no money. And it's just, if I'm going to get kicked and punched in the head for a living, then I want to get paid, you know? So that's pretty much why I did my fifth fight. I was like, there's no money in this. Forget it. You know, if I'm going to be a full contact fighter, then I might as well get into boxing, you know? Hmm. That's why I felt like, you know, if I'm going to do it, I might as well do that then. Because I'll be honest with you, I remember when the first UFC came out, and all of us in martial arts, I was a senior in high school at that time, it was 93. And all of us in the martial arts community was like, this stuff is nonsense. Look at it now. It's a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
Now I wish I would have got into that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, when the UFC first came out, none of us were like, this ain't gonna last. This is just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, it was a real eye-opening experience for, you know, just the martial arts, Gracie's, you know, came on the scene and just really kind of turned the world on its head.
Absolutely. But it was good that it showed us a lot of what we were lacking in, that we believed, you know, we were Tommy tough guys and all of that, you know, and that we didn't really need any more than what our traditional art. And it just goes to show, like, it showed us, like, wow, we're lacking so many areas, conditioning, endurance. What happens if you do go to the ground? You know, because there's a lot of people out there, collegiate wrestlers, you know. I mean, I got lucky. I never got to an altercation with one on the street. But you realize, wow, these guys are no joke. You know, a lot of times you think of wrestling, you think of the WWE stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But or you watch a collegiate wrestling, but you're thinking like, oh, he shoots in on me, I'm going to give a knee to the face, or I'll just punch him in the top of the head. And it's like, I don't really work that way, you know? So the Gracies definitely did us all a favor by showing us our weak points, you know, and things that we all needed to work on for sure. So definitely a shout out to them for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's always kind of a funny thing to me, even after seeing it in the UFC, that a lot of, you know, I'm going to single out Kenpo folk, but I'm sure it comes up in the other martial arts as well. But a lot of people are like, oh yeah, you know, they're not going to, you know, take me to the ground. I'm going to, you know, do this or that and keep them from taking me to the ground. But a lot of these Kenpo folk that say that seem to forget that there were a number of Kenpo folk in the UFC. He's one that did, you know, did very well. Keith Hackney was a Kenpo stylist.
Yes,
who did very well, but he did, you know, he did fight Hoist, and it was like, yeah, you know, I love Kenpo, but yeah, he still got taken down. You know, all the great techniques that we have, you know, didn't help. So
that's the thing. Once a BJJ guy takes you down, you've got to know BJJ. Otherwise, you're just, do yourself a favor and tap out there so you don't get choked out or get an arm broken. You know, just tap out. If you don't know the ground game and you get taken down against somebody who's a master at the ground game, just tap out. Don't even waste your time. Because this is coming from a person who's more of a traditional martial artist and always will be. It's not going to help you on the ground against somebody who's an expert grappler. And that goes for a collegiate wrestler as well. You know, if you're a collegiate, if you go, you get taken down by a collegiate wrestler, tap out. You know, just tap out, because there's nothing you're gonna be able to do at that point. You know,
yeah, it's definitely, but a lot definitely of the different fighters beast.
Now, oh yeah, totally different animal, sure, absolutely.
So, jumping back to the Hapkido side, so what were the things that really, you know, got you all in for Hapkido? Were the areas, I know for me, you know, the wrist, I love the wrist locks and those sorts of things. So
well, that's pretty much Well, that was part of it, but really was the kicking at first. Because, you know, I, like I said, as a little kid, I just loved to be kicking and punching, you know. And Shotokan, like, we had, you know, very few kicks, but we had the kicks, but they were just very snappy, short type of kicks. Now, I was watching, now I started learning the kicks where I saw in the movies, you know, the high, fancy, boom, kicks and stuff like that. So that was really what caught my eye at the beginning, was the kicking techniques of Hapkido, which I really, really enjoyed, which is more from the, there's two lineages of Hapkido. Now, I definitely believe Chaeyoung-sul, Dojinim Chaeyoung-sul, is the founder of Hapkido. That's who I consider. Now, his student, one of his students, Dojinim Jihan-jae, who was the founder of Shinmu Hapkido, after Chaeyoung-sul died, he's saying that he's the actual founder of Hapkido because he says he's the one who came up with the name Hapkido first. Now, there's video of Chaeyoung-sul using the name Hapkido. So you have, you know, the Hapkido community split down the center there with one side leans towards Che, the other side leans towards G. I show respect to both of them. They're both my seniors. They both, you know, I mean, Jihan-jae for sure, though. He's the one who made Hapkido worldwide known. I give him all the credit. You've seen the movie, obviously, Bruce Lee, Game of Death, correct?
Yes, yes.
Remember the guy he fights with the gold belt?
Yes, yes.
That's Dojinim Jihan-jae.
Okay.
He's the founder of Shinmu Hapkido. So he's definitely the one that made Hapkido world known. So he gets all the credit in the world for that, absolutely. But I just believe that Chaeyoung-sul is the founder of Hapkido. That's just, you know, what I tend to believe. But I respect both men, you know, and I don't get involved in it. I try not to get involved in those politics anyway.
Yeah, I think we all have that, and you know, no art seems to be immune to that. We have the politics and drama in Kenpo. We have that in Capoeira, and yeah, it's it never ends.
The Jihan-jae side kicks are always midline to low. All the high kick stuff, I will say this too, that came from Jihan-jae side. Chaeyoung-sul's is midline to low kicks because he's more of the Aikido Jiu-Jitsu, which is the main style Hapkido came from, is Aikido Jiu-Jitsu. But Jihan-jae, he's the one with the high fancy. He one that brought the fancier Korean style type of kicking to Hapkido. I do give him the credit for that as well. And that's why I really enjoyed the stuff. And I didn't realize I had springs in my legs because we had a medicine ball attached to our ceiling. No, I had just made yellow belt at this point. So I didn't know why Master Code. I guess Master Code, he could tell. He's like, Ediki. He always called me Ediki, kick ball. I'm like, kick the ball? He's like, yeah, kick the ball. So okay. I ran, jumped up, hit it with a jump sidekick. Nailed it. Very first time. So I was just like, wow. So every test, Ediki, kick ball. I mean, demonstrate kicking I started kicking with jump sidekicks, jump spinning kicks. Eventually, I was kicking the whole time. So I was a very, very good kicker in my younger years. I was very flexible. I mean, I got the splits down. Now, mind you, I had the 6-7 years of Shotokan experience prior, of course, but I never really pushed myself in stretching those years. You know, it was just warm-ups. I never realized the importance of flexibility until the Korean arts. So once we started doing the Hapkido, I learned about the importance of flexibility. I really started stretching hard, and I attained the splits within 6 months. Yeah. I mean, I got so flexible. I go down into the straight splits, like bound dom splits, and you could put phone books under my feet. I mean, That's how flexible I got. So I was very flexible, and I was extremely fast, believe it or not. Very, very fast with my kicking. Now, you know, I can still throw some decent kicks, you know. It takes about 45 minutes to an hour of stretching first.
Well, I think once you get it, you don't lose it. You know, I got to be in a seminar with Bill Superfoot Wallace not that long ago, and he's closing in on his 80s, and he still does full splits, side splits, no problem. And
he's amazing.
People,
he's amazing. Oh,
you know, he's.
Yeah, I've met him a few times. I went to a few seminars. Oh, he's just. That was one of my greatest days of my martial arts career. It was getting kicked in the face by Bill Superfoot. I bragged about that for months.
No,
I was kicked in the face by Bill Superfoot Wallace. You know, love that.
I'm right there with you. I'm in the elite club of those that have been. I got kicked, punched, and choked by Superfoot. So
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I said, I never got choked by him. No, I feel bad.
Yeah, no, we were doing some kind of partner drill, and it was really funny because he like laid out like, okay, like we're doing, you know, we're going to do like a round kick, side kick, hook kick kind of combination. And he laid it out very slow, like, okay, we're going to do the round kick, then we're going to do the side kick, then we're going to do the hook kick. Got it? We're going to do the round kick, we're going to do the side kick, we're going to do the hook kick. And he was like, went over this a bunch of times, and so he let us go, and we're doing our thing, and I'm kicking at my partner, and he comes walking by, and for some reason I was doing something else. I don't even know what I was thinking about, but I was not doing the round kick, side kick, hook kick. He comes over, he's like, what did I say? It's like, oh, yeah. And so he gets me in a nice little headlock, and he's like, do what I said. So yeah. I was like,
He's so funny, dude. Oh, yes, he is. He's an amazing man. Absolutely. One of my all-time favorites. If I have a martial arts Rushmore, he would definitely be on.
Oh, yeah. He's truly a legend, so it's very nice. So moving to the teaching side, when did that get started for you? When were you always interested in the teaching part of it? Or
yeah, I think I for the first time, Master Grandmaster Ko asked me to take over a class for a while. He had to go in the office. I think I kind of fell in love with teaching at that point too. And that was before I was black belt. Because I said I would come to the dojo. You know, I get home from school. I might eat real fast sometimes. Sometimes I didn't. And I go right to the dojo. So I was there for little kids' classes. I was just there for like 6-7 hours a day. And sometimes he was like, Eriki, go teach a kid class right now. And just the little kids are funny to begin with, you know. And so I just really enjoyed it. And honestly, to really make yourself a better martial artist, you have to teach. You know, you teach, you learn. Not only do you learn how to communicate with people better and everything else, you also learn how to make your own technique better. You know, so by repetition, also like doing things like, oh, if I do something like this, it works even better than I do like this. Okay, so yeah, in order to really get your technique down better, you got to teach. And I just actually enjoyed it. And that was my first class I taught was probably 92, 93. And I actually had a pretty good knack at doing it. So he'd had me teach a lot of kids' classes and stuff. So, yeah, I've been teaching really since 1993. I wasn't getting paid, but so professionally, I've been teaching probably since professionally, like getting paid for it, like since 94, 95.
Very nice. So, would you have any tips or advice for someone that is newly in instructing? So in at my Kenpo school, I am newly part of the instructors program.
Excellent.
As far as capoeira goes, I've taught for a lot of years. So, you know, I kind of in an interesting position, at least as far as kind of my view of it. But just curious for you know, people like myself or others that are listening that are just getting into teaching, what would be some tips and advice that you'd give?
Yes. For one, you guys are in a much more privileged position than I got to be. Okay. We didn't have the instructor's courses, the master's courses. We didn't have like camps and stuff like this back when I was first starting in the 80s and early mid 90s. None of that stuff existed. You know, you got thrown in, you're told go teach the class. So you pretty much just taught the way you were taught by your instructor. So for one, listen to your instructors in these courses, okay? Because like everything else, everything has to progress. You can't stay at the same thing and stay stagnant and become archaic because it's never going to work. Because, you know, I can't teach today like I taught 10 years ago. I couldn't teach 10 years ago like I did 10 years prior to that. It has to constantly evolve, constantly change, you know? And like my instructors, you know, they couldn't teach me the way they were taught back in the 70s and 60s and 50s, they'd wind up in jail. You know? So it's like you have to constantly progress. So you guys are in a really lucky position to have these instructor courses. Also, listen to your students. Listen to them, okay? Because people have to remember, like, the whole mindset of, like, everybody learns the same, everybody has to be the same level. Doesn't work that way. You have kids with autism. You have some kids who are just slower learning. Some kids are just not naturally athletic or as gifted as other kids. Everybody's an individual. That's what you have to remember. Everybody is their own person, and everybody, you're not going to teach everybody the same. You can't. It's impossible. Matter of fact, it shouldn't be done that way. Each student should get some individual alone time with the instructor. You know, I don't mind saying alone because a lot of crap goes on today. You know, I don't mean like where parents, everything can see, but like one-on-one is what I'm saying. Like, you know, it's, you know, you can evaluate the student. Okay, this kid's at this level. This kid's at that level. Okay, so it's a learning process, obviously, being an instructor as well as the student. But you guys are in a great position to have these instructor courses and the master courses now and stuff. It's a really, really privileged position to be in. But just listen to your students. Listen to them, okay? Find out their strengths, find out their weaknesses, okay? Find out the ones that have attention problems, which you're going to find a lot of them have attention problems. And you can't lose your temper. As much as you might have a bad day, you know, and things just don't seem to be working out from the minute you woke up, once you get to this school, got to leave that outside the door. Cannot bring that under the floor. Because that energy, the students are going to feel it. The parents are going to feel it. And that's the quickest way to lose money is the parents think, okay, this guy's got an attitude problem. You know, like I said, it's not like the old days where, you know, you all in there, you're not throwing a strong enough punch, the teacher takes a poking sword, hits you in your arm, and the parents look the other way. Like, well, he's, you know, we're paying him to do it, see, so he knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? Parents today, I mean, in case people haven't noticed, they spoil their kids rotten. You know, they really, really do. And I'm not a parent, so I really don't have the right to say or judge. This is just my own personal point of view. But just get to learn and get to know each student individually and find out their strengths, their weaknesses, their intelligence level, where they're at, and everything else. Find out, you know, ask the parents questions. Like, is little Jimmy or is little Susie, like, is there anything I should know about them? Like, you know, because you'll find a lot of parents say, oh, my kids. Now, I don't know. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of kids lately these days are autistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of parents are just assuming that about their kid. I don't know how many of their kids have actually been diagnosed with that. Mm-hmm. But autism, the autism spectrum is right now, it's seems to be out there a lot, you know, and some of those kids who learn like that, some of them you have to really work with, you know, just keep your patience and just show that you care, you know, and like I said, get to know each student individually and find their strengths and weaknesses.
Very nice. Yeah.
And don't look for perfection. Don't harp too much on the kids. Like, I got a good stance here. Good block. Let them just learn, you know, okay, well, I'm posted like this. I'm posted this. All that stuff you can clean up later as they get older, you know. Mm-hmm. But you got to constantly with kids, you got to keep their attention. You have about, at the most, 40 to 45 minutes with the kids' attention. And that's just if you're lucky. And so you have to keep it energized. You got to keep going, keep going, keep going. Don't ever have the kids sit down. Like, I know, like, a lot of classes don't have the kids sit down outside, bring a couple kids up, do this for them, everybody else watch. Don't do that. Because those kids, once you've lost them, you know, got to keep it going. Got to keep it going. It, for kids, you have to have a high energy personality for kids, for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. Very nice. I like it. So since, you know, Hapkido is not as, not as widespread or as well known as its Taekwondo, you know, counterpart, what do you see as kind of the future for Hapkido? Where do you kind of see is it going? Where would you like to see it go as we go into the future, especially considering with the, you know, the rise of MMA and kind of contrast to that? Where do you see the future of Hapkido?
Well, I mean, you get Hapkido traditionalists will say, well, Hapkido is not a sport. You know, you can't make it a sport. You can throw a punch, you can throw a kick, anybody can make anything a sport. Okay. Now, it shouldn't be focused on a sport like Taekwondo is. No, but there should be a little sport aspect brought to Hapkido. Start some hobby. Like, and there is an organization which is actually the only association that is backed by the Korean government right now, which is called the Korea Hapkido General Association. Now, the KHF, which was the Korea Hapkido Federation, they used to be backed by the Korean government. They're not anymore. This the KHGA are the only ones backed by the Korean government now. Now, they're doing a lot of sport aspect. I hope they can find that good balance and don't get too crazy and go the same way Taekwondo did, because that would just ruin Hapkido. But you got to make it some sport aspect to it, I believe, to pique people's interest and get it out there and have it known, you know. So that's one thing I'd like to see it do. But also, I'm glad you asked me that question, because in the last couple of years, last year and a half, 2 years, me and a couple of guys I'm with, we were unfairly attacked in the Hapkido community. So, you know, Hapkido is our heart. Will always be with us. But we will be dropping out of the Hapkido community soon. We'll always be teaching Hapkido, but the community, we're going to be dropping out of the Hapkido community soon. And we weren't going to launch this or say anything until after the 1st of December, but I don't know how long it's going to take you to edit this, so you might not even get this out until after December. So I think it's okay to tell you. So me and Grandmaster Paul Holly, we have developed what we call the Tung Hap Kwan Hoshin Sul. Okay. Now, Hoshin Sul simply is, in English, would be self-defense or self-protection. That's all it means. Okay. It's not an art per se. It's a self-defense system. Because I was the vice president of the Tung Hap Kwan Hapkido Association, and Grandmaster Paul Holly is the founder and was the president. But we've now since gave it to Grandmaster Brian Ayotte. He's taking over the Tung Hap Kwan Hapkido Association, and we have all the trust and faith in the world. He's going to do an amazing job. He's got to pick his own new board of directors and everything. It's his thing now. Grandmaster Holly and I have started the Tung Hap Kwan Hoshin Sul, which basically means the integrated school of self-defense. That's all it means. It's a self-defense system, not really a style per se. And the only reason we're using as a title Korean, because well, for one, Grandmaster Holly is the main founder. I'm just a co-founder, and that's what he wants. So the main founder, he's entitled to whatever he wants to call it. But also too, our backgrounds are mostly Korean martial arts. So we're showing that respect, giving that respect to the Koreans, because most of our background is Korean arts. But the Tung Hap Kwan Hoshin Sul is strictly an American self-defense system, with him and I as the root of the lineage. So I put out my past instructors and I put my lineage out on Facebook or on social media 100 times over. If somebody missed it by this point, oh well. Don't ask me what my lineage is again. I'm not going to go through it again. I'm not doing it. Okay, I put it on social media 100 times. If you haven't seen it then, I don't have to tell you. Okay? But the Hoshin Sul, the Tung Hap Kwan Hoshin Sul, the lineage starts with me and Grandmaster Holly. We are the root. Now, we already have a couple of instructors that are going to be the branches of that tree. So we already have a couple of instructors that have been with us for a while. Okay, but that's going to be launched after December 1st. But you got the rare privilege of getting the inside information earlier. So, but again, like I said, I'm not leaving Hapkido. You know, we're not leaving Hapkido. That's our, you know, that's I'll always love that. Hapkido. We're just leaving the community because politics and just, we're talking about like high ranking grandmasters. I mean, like really high ranking people, a couple of people we consider like brothers that stabbed us in the back and stuff. And it's just very immature attitudes. It's like, you know what? We got a bad, unfortunately, we have a sour taste in our mouth now with the whole Hapkido community. So, hey, I hate to go drag on you, like, you know, drab. But
no, I know. I can totally understand. And, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, yeah, no, it seems no art is immune to that. You know, at the end of the day, there are still people that, you know, have their ideas, opinions, you know, whatever bad.
And that's fine.
Things that.
And that's fine. But, you know, but when you're bad mouthing somebody about you, bad mouthing people, a whole bunch of other people, people you don't even know. And so the person bad mouthing you, something you looked at as a brother, man, that hurts, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to what y'all are going to be doing with that. And we'll certainly keep track of it and we'll definitely excellent. Have to Thank have you. You on again as that gets going. And
it'd be my pleasure, progress. Be my honor. Thank you.
Very nice.
Yes, sir.
All right, so we are going to move into our lightning round here. Since you are not a Kenpo stylist, these questions are kind of a little bit different, or we'll have to kind of massage them a little bit differently, but we'll see what we got here. So first one being, do you have a favorite technique? Now, in the Kenpo world, we're kind of broken up into, you have your basics, your kicks and punches, you have your self-defense techniques, you're the... rehearsed set of specific self-defense techniques, and you have your forms and other things like that. So what I would say with favorite technique is just kind of anything that you do in Hapkido or any of the arts that you've trained that maybe is your favorite, or maybe a couple of your favorite movements.
Yes, my younger years before I got a bad back and bad knees and stuff, I would say kicking techniques, because I was a very good kicker and I was doing. Now, I used to be able to do that helicopter kick that Jean-Claude Van Damme does. Oh. I wanted to say for the record, that's the absolute worst kick. It's everybody thinks it looks so beautiful on screen, and I'm sure it does, but for somebody who's actually trained and knows what they're doing, that's a horrible kick. There's no power to it. It's absolutely done completely wrong. That's not how you do a jump spinning heel kick. Okay. But I was a kicker and I was really good, fast. I could do a lot of 540s, 720s, bally kicks, all that stuff. I was really good at all that stuff. So in my thinner years, I'm 240 pounds now. So it's a little hard to get 240 pounds up in the air, But in my thinner, younger years, I would say kick. Now, yes, self-defense techniques. I don't really have a set of self-defense techniques that I prefer over the other, but I love all the joint locks with the combination with the throws, whether it be a wrist lock, which is called a goki, arm lock or arm bar, which would be called koloki. And that's the Korean terminology to that, to wherever it's throws or whatever. Those I really love now, and it's because I also have a better understanding of the techniques of the body mechanics as well. Okay. And that's another thing I would like to say, for the record, people got to watch out for when they see people talk about, all right, you have the small intestine here and the meridian here. Somebody's they're compensating for actually the lack of knowledge. Okay. By using big words. Okay. I'm not the most articulate person in the world, but I know I'm very well known, informed about how self-defense techniques actually work. And that's why I also tell people, don't focus on pressure points unless the pressure points are using the ones in the head. Those 9 times out of 10 will work. But like the arms, body, the back, legs, whatever, learn them, but don't focus on them. Don't think they're going to, don't try to utilize those in a self-defense situation in the street, because especially you got somebody who's high on PCP or whatever, they can take a gunshot to the chest and they ain't going to feel it. Okay. And everybody's pain threshold is different and stuff. A lot of times pressure points don't work. They really don't. I've learned, because I do security. I'm a security specialist, and I was a bouncer for many years. I've learned using the pressure points behind the ear, under the nose, on the side of the temples. They've worked out for me very well when I've had to restrain somebody or escort them out of the building. So those I would tell people to really focus on if you're going to focus on pressure points. But as far as this body stuff and all that, don't focus on that stuff. So watch out for people who say the small intestine into the 12th meridian. Watch out for those guys.
Gotcha. Going back to the kicking a little bit, do you have a favorite kick?
Now it would probably be the hook kick, because that one's probably the easiest one for me to throw. But before, it was probably the spinning heel kick, high end. Well, not the sweep one. I was never really a big fan of the sweep one. That one. Now, I'm a fan of the sweep. If I'm here and you go throw a kick and I use my back leg, I come forward, boom, sweep your leg off money, and then drop a kick down on top. I've used that in tournaments many times, and that's always worked. But that low spinning sweep kick, don't. it's part of the curriculum. Learn it, But it's not a very effective technique. But spinning heel kick, side kick, which to me, the side kick is the most important kick. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing as an instructor, get your students side kicks down pat as best as you can. Like I said, again, when they're little kids, don't worry on like perfect form yet, but try to get that sidekick down, because that's the kick that all schools would be judged on. The sidekick. You can have you get the best roundhouse kick, best hook kick, best spinning kicks, best jump kicks. If your sidekick is blasey, you're going to have the other people say, oh, they're a McDojo, which I can't stand that whole McDojo thing. I think that's ridiculous, but they're going to say you're not legitimate if the sidekick is bad. Sidekick is the most important kick.
Gotcha. All right. Next question. Even though you mentioned that, you know, they don't have forms, in Hapkido per se, but since you've done other arts,
I help you do it.
Oh, okay. Well, then, do you have a favorite form?
Yeah, probably number five. You see, in Hapkido is called basic form number one, basic form number two, basic form number three. There's no name to it. Like, there's no diving falcon, hidden dragon, or anything like that. We just call it Hapkido form, basic one, two, three, four, five. I think five is my favorite.
Okay.
Probably is the most difficult one to perform.
Okay. Very nice. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
The bow staff.
Oh, very nice.
To me, it's that's the one that makes most sense. I mean, you can use anything, like a broom, mop. You can use that as a bow staff. You walk around with nunchucks, you're going to get arrested. You walk around with a sword, you're going to get arrested. You know, size, commas. You walk around with any of that stuff, tone fuzz, you're going to get arrested. I can walk down the street with a broom. I'm not going to get arrested with that. You know, yeah. And the Hapkido cane.
And yes.
We have a cane techniques.
Yes.
And the Hapkido cane.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I was very interested in Hapkido about is the cane techniques. So
yeah, absolutely.
Very nice. All right. Next question. Is if there was anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be?
Bruce Lee.
Very nice. Yeah, he's definitely the answer I think most people include on their list. This being a Kenpo podcast, you know, of course, Ed Parker is the other one, but I've forbade people from using Ed Parker because since this is a Kenpo podcast, it's like, okay, yeah, obviously you're going to say Ed Parker. So,
right.
Very
but
nice.
Second for me would be Dojin Cheong-soo. He passed in 86, but the founder, who I consider the founder of Hapkido. First would be Bruce Lee and then him.
Okay. Very nice. All right. That's usually the last question, but since this is, you know, we're talking the Korean arts, I'm going to throw this other bonus question in there.
All right.
So what's the over under of how many hundreds of times you've seen Best of the Best?
Oh, it's not about hundreds, about thousands. Okay, now I think from what I understand, Grandmaster Phil Bree is making a part five, and they're going back to the heart. Like the first one, like, had a lot of heart. That's why I love the first one. The first one's considered by Sports Illustrated one of the best top sports movies of all time. The first one, Best of Best, you know. And I like two probably more than one because all the Hapkido used in part two.
I liked you from when we started chatting that just seals it even more for me. And I don't know if you've been watching Cobra Kai, the show Cobra Kai.
Oh yeah, yes.
But
I haven't seen this part two season six yet, but I'm hoping to
Yeah, I actually just started this morning, but kind of previous
Netflix.
To that.
I don't have Netflix, so I use like the pirated sites. So I don't know what I'll be
doing. I won't tell anyone if you won't. in the last part of, you know, I guess season six, part one, there was a moment where Johnny Lawrence, my spirit animal, sharing the awesomeness of Best of the Best 2, and I pretty much fell out of my chair when I saw that. I was like, oh my god. And he was just talking about how
oh wow, I forget that. He's like, well, I haven't seen the first season six part one since it first came out. So it's been a few months.
Sorry, now, so. I kind of spoiled it for you, but yeah, there's
I saw it, I just forgot about it.
Okay. Yeah, no, but yeah, they gave a nice little shout out to Best of the Best too, and I was over the moon about that. So very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
So Best of the Best two is probably my favorite one because of all the Hapkido and the fights. But as far as a movie, all around better movie, obviously part one would be the better movie.
Gotcha. Very nice. All right. Well, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me.
Thank you. I really find it an honor and a privilege and excited and very honored that you would ask a nobody like me to be on your cast. Your podcast. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
We all have a story to share, and I love hearing people's stories about how they got involved in the arts, and not just Kenpo, but all the arts, even the ones that both the ones that I want to train in and the ones I don't want to train in, I want to hear everyone's story. So,
one day we'll get together and we can train and I can show you Hoshinsu and you can show me Kenpo.
All right. We'll make that happen. So,
excellent.
So now is your time for shameless self-promotion. You can plug anything you want or say anything that maybe we haven't gotten to that you want to get out there, and we'll close out.
Actually, yes. My Hapkido classes are at Tigers Black Belts in Raleigh, North Carolina, on Litchford Road. Come check me out. Also, we teach judo there. Well, Master Park does, and we teach taekwondo and kickboxing. I think we are a very well-rounded martial arts school. Probably one of the better ones you'll find. So come check us out. Also, Hapkido wise goes, I want to give a shout out to Grandmaster Steve Roadhouse Sexton. He's actually the movie Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze is loosely based on him.
Okay.
And all the Hapkido you see in the Best of Best movies, that comes from his curriculum. So I want to give a shout out to Grandmaster Sexton. He'd be a great person you'd want to interview in a podcast too, if you don't mind me.
No, I'm always looking for recommendations. So yes, I will definitely reach out to him.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thank you again so much. And I can't wait to get this out to everyone. And I'll be in touch.
All right. Excellent. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.